Welcome to Greek Club at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. We are broadcasting today from Global Warming Tower here at the campus. It's a beautiful spring day. What's it going to be today? About 65, I think. So all of you people that are listening in Siberia, we're sorry for that. Or in the Baltic regions where it's cold, so forth. But we are reading the letter to the Hebrews, and we are in verse 28, if I'm not mistaken. We are reading about what Moses did by faith. In verse 27, we had, by faith he, Moses, left Egypt because he did not fear the king's wrath, for he was devoted to, as one who saw, he was devoted to the unseen one, ton aoraton. So that's, in a sense, that's the Exodus, and now verse 28, we actually get to the Passover that accompanied the Exodus, and we move on from there. The death of the firstborn is implied in the narrative and so forth. So, yeah, Will, go ahead.
This last verb in 27.
Yes.
Did you translate that actively or?
Well, it's active, yeah. It means, I guessed at its meaning initially because I know pros kartereo, which means to be devoted to. So, to be intent upon. So, he was intent upon or focused on or something like that, kept in focus. Kind of like a point guard, you know. Moses the point guard, yeah, right, so, right. Okay, good. Verse 28. Piste pepoiken ta pascha kai ten praschizin tu haimatas hiname ha alethruon, ha alethruon ta protataka thige auton. So again, not too long of a sentence, not too bad. So once again, the dative of means, by faith. Now this is kind of a picture-perfect form. We've got the duplication at the front of the stem and the kappa at the end. So this is a perfect indicative active, third singular, with the movable nu of poieo. He has kept, or he has made, ta pascha, the Passover. And here's the other direct object, the pouring out, the proskuzin, I had to look this up, that means pouring out, of blood, right? So now why this is a perfect and not an aorist indicative, I don't know, unless it's some sort of sense that the Passover activity has an ongoing effect or something like that. But I'm not quite sure why we have a perfect here in a string of aorists, which is what most of the rest of the verbs are. So, and there was a purpose why Moses did that. Lest, hiname, is a negative purpose and can be translated in English, lest the destroying one, alathruo means to destroy, lest the destroying one, and now ta protataka is the direct object of the participle. The one who destroys the firstborn. Thige is actually from thingano. I had to look it up. It's the aorist subjunctive active of thingano. So theta, iota, double gamma, alpha, nu, omega. And it means to touch. And it takes a genitive direct object. I first tried to take auton with ta protataka, but I think that firstborn is the object of destroyer, lest the one who destroys the firstborn touch them. Auton, I think, is the direct object of the subjunctive mood verb. And that explains the reason, the negative purpose, why Moses kept the Passover and the pouring out of the blood. So not too hard. Main clause, purpose clause, and a little bit of vocab to look up. So comments, questions? Yeah, Will, go ahead.
A couple comments.
Yeah.
Does thingano, does that normally take the genitive, or is there other instances where it takes the genitive?
the lexicon gave that as the, not to be sure, I'm not sure, to be honest, I'm not sure if it ever occurs again in the New Testament. I know this because I looked it up. Yeah, but the lexicon gave this as the first case, if you will, of the direct object, okay. Right?
And then he kept Passover. Do you think that's an exegetical chi in the sense that it's explaining what the Passover is?
He kept the Passover, even the shedding of blood? That's a possibility.
Or is he talking about two different things?
Yeah, yeah. That's a good question, actually.
Well, you know, the Pesach has more than just this.
Right.
The eating of the bitter herbs.
Right, the whole thing.
Right.
And this presumably refers to the not only the shedding or the pouring out, but the smearing of the same, right? Yeah, yeah, that's actually a good example. It's a good question. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Pascha could have a narrower referent or a wider referent, but yeah. So, to be honest, I suppose I'd have to look up a bunch of uses of Pascha, and see if it's ever linked like this with, you know, with a related action like that. So, yep. But you're right. There's a lot more going on than just the shedding of the lamb's blood. Right, and interestingly, I think sometimes is this I think this is right, isn't it, Reed? That the in the Old Testament narrative, the Passover sacrifice is not an atoning sacrifice.
No.
It's a rescuing
mm-hmm,
sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't actually know, to be honest, if in Judaism it came to be understood as atoning.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, when Jesus says, "Behold, the Lamb of God," I mean, when John says, "Behold, the Lamb of God." If that's a reference to the pass, if him as the Passover, you know, we should actually stop to think about whether or not that's an atoning reference. I mean, if assuming that the Old Testament theology is coming along, you know, sort of full bore, because as we all know, there's more than one kind of sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but.
Well, the sacrifice of atonement was that that was a lamb and a goat, or a goat or a lamb.
Well, there were the guilt offerings and the sin offerings that went on regularly, right? Sort of ad hoc, if that's a good phrase. But then the Day of Atonement was a goat, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So when we hear Lamb of God, that brings us naturally back to Passover, not atonement.
Well, yeah. See, I think we kind of moosh. I think Christians sometimes moosh all this stuff together, and we think Lamb sacrifice. It's always atonement. But it, you know, there's more going on there, and so in the Lord's Supper, without getting into that, you know, you've got all these Old Testament strains of theology that come sort of swirling together. You've got renewal of the covenant. You've got you do have atonement, because it's this for the forgiveness of sins, right? But it's also, yeah, there's all kinds of theology going on there. You can preach like 3 or 4 or 8 or 12 Maundy Thursdays in a row and not repeat yourself. If I could say it that way, so, yeah.
You could.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah. That reminds me of verse 29, to which we will turn now. So, right. Right. Yeah. Verse 29. Piste di ebezon tain eruthron thalasan hos dia xeras geis heis peron labantes hoi aegypt. To oi, kat epathezon. By faith, they, this is from diabino, it's the strong aorist indicative active, third plural, they stepped through or crossed over. Now, you might be able to guess, I had to guess, that eruthros means red or crimson, right? So they stepped through the Red Sea as through xeros in the Gospels. When you see this, you often think of withered, like a withered hand, but it means dried up. Okay, xerino is the verb from which the adjective comes, through dry land. Now this was a little difficult. Labantas peron is a little bit of an idiom, apparently. Of course, it's the aorist participle of lambano, to take or receive. And a pera, a feminine noun, hey pera, is an attempt or a test. So receiving an attempt, which means giving it the old college try, apparently. So making, we would say making an attempt. So making an attempt of which the Egyptians were drowned, were plunged into the deep, right? So the referent of the relative pronoun, hais, is probably land right there next to it, although it could be thalasson because that's feminine singular as well. So is the writer saying they made an attempt of the dry land? They tried out the dry land? I think that's probably what's going on. But after they had done that, of course, it didn't work. The Egyptians were katapatheod. They were drowned, right? So by faith, this all happened by faith, right? So that's not too bad once we figure out what lambano peira means. So, okay? All right, verse 30. Piste ta teche ierico epizon kyklothenta epi hepta hemeras. And we'll get verse 31 as well. Piste ra'ab he porne u sun apolata tois apethesazin dexamene tus kataskapus met erenes. So by faith, a techas is a wall. So, and it's a ta, techos, neuter. This is the subject of the verb. The walls, and Jericho does not decline as a place name, so we take it as a genitive. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell. Now, kikla'u means to surround, right? And it this participle parses as aorist participle passive, neuter plural nominative, right? So its referent is ta teche, the walls. So by faith, the walls of Jericho fell after they had been surrounded. Since it's a predicate position, we'll take it temporally. And then I suspected this is what this meant, but I looked it up. Epi plus the accusative can actually express the extent of time, like an accusative of the extent of time. So for 7 days. Right, I had hoped that was the case, but as you know, in BDAG, there's about 87 pages on epi, and you finally get to the right entry, and you go, oh, I thought that's what that meant. So by faith, the walls of Jericho fell after they had been surrounded for 7 days. By faith, Rahab, the prostitute, did not perish along. This is from Sin Apalimi. And apolemy, as you may remember, means to destroy. In the middle, this is an aorist indicative middle. It means to be destroyed or simply to perish. And when you put the sun on the front, it means to perish along with something, right? So by faith, Rahab the prostitute did not co-perish, if I can say it that way, with tois ap. This is from apetheo, which means to disobey. And it's the aorist participle active masculine plural dative. Those who did not obey. And now dexamene is from our friend decomai. It's the aorist participle middle deponent feminine singular nominative. And the referent is Rahab, the prostitute, right? And we'll give it a causal translation because that seems to make sense. By faith, Rahab the prostitute did not perish along with those who disobeyed because she received tus kataskapus. This is just a noun that means spy, the people who are, probably the people who are scoping out against. Maybe is how that meaning comes about. Because she had received the spies with peace. And by the way, this is just a small thing, but in English, now I don't know about Latvian or other languages, but in English, you need to put the prepositional phrase in the right spot in the sentence to make it make sense. And the classic example of this, of course, is Abraham Lincoln wrote the Gettysburg Address while riding on a train on the back of an envelope. And when you do it in that order, it sounds like the train was on the back of the envelope. Well, Greek can put prepositional phrases about 87 miles away from a main verb, and it's still adverbial, right? And so it's not the spies who were with peace. It's she received the spies. She received with peace the spies, right? The greatest example of this, by the way, is Paul's letter to the Ephesians, where in one sentence you'll have like seven prepositional phrases. In this and with this and in this and into this. And they all, if you diagram the sentence, they all actually are adverbial. So maybe the most famous example of this is he gave, Ephesians 4:11 and following, he gave apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers. And then you've got, is it ace pros pros or pros pros ace or something like that? And a very strong case can be made that most of the English translations put the comma in the wrong spot. But maybe we'll read Ephesians when we get done with Hebrews, right? Because the sentences are getting a little short. I'm getting a little bored with these short sentences in Hebrews, right?
So,
yeah. And it's all by faith, right? That's exactly right. So,
but my question is,
yes, Dan?
The situation of peace.
Yes. Well, she received the spies with peace, right? So as opposed, you know, often a good question is as opposed to what, right? With hatred, with deception, right? So I'm not exactly, well, I don't know if the narrative there in actually talks about Rahab's motive. I mean, her.
Shalom is
yeah.
Like in Joshua.
Right. Right, so, right.
I was just wondering.
Yep, no, it's a good question. And that, by the way, that actually does bring up a good question. And I think actually, to be honest, common sense people have always known this, but the structuralists actually have taught us to be more attentive to this question, which I said it this way a while ago, just a minute ago, that is, with peace as opposed to what? I mean, because everything is defined by its opposite, right? And so that's always a very good question exegetically when a text says something to say, oh, this as opposed to what? See, so for instance, I was just involved in a certification interview. By grace as opposed to what? By faith as opposed to what? I mean, both in the Reformation day and now in our day as well. So always a very, very helpful question to remember to ask. So that becomes like an exegetical knee-jerk reaction. You know, you just learn to constantly ask that question. It's really helpful. So, and so in this case, it's verse 31 as opposed to verse 32, which we'll read right now. Oh, yeah. You don't have to look up most of these words, right? Verse 32, kai te eti lego epilepse megar die gumenon ha chronos peri gedaon barak samson ieftae david te kai samuel kai ton propheton. Oh, I just made a comment about short sentences. Well, this is not too bad. Let's get the whole thing. It's just a bunch of vocab. Verse 33, hoi diapistaos kat ego nisanta basileas eirgasanta dikaiosinein ep etikon ep angeleon epraxan stamata leonton as bezan dynamin piras efigan stamata machaires Edinamothesan apa asteneas egenethesan iskiroi en polemo parembolas eklinon alotrion. So it's long, but it's not hard once you get the vocab. So verse 32. And what still am I saying? Subjects in the next line, time, hakranas, time will fail me relating or narrating, concerning, blah, blah, blah. So the participle diegumenon is present participle, middle deponent, masculine singular accusative. The referent is ma. The translations actually take it as conditional. For time will fail me if I relate, if I narrate about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, both David and Samuel and the prophets. See, all of this is one peri phrase, right? Peri plus the genitive, right? And now we get a relative clause, verse 33. Who, through faith, this is from katagonizomai, which means to conquer, conquered kingdoms. This is ergasanta. It's an irregular augment. It's from ergadzomai. You might expect just to lengthen to eta, but instead you get the epsilon iota, right? So worked righteousness. The next verb is from epitinkano, which means to obtain or receive. And it's just the aorist indicative. It's a strong aorist. So it goes from tinkano to etikon is the third principal part. And you put the epi on the front. So obtain promises. The next verb is the aorist from phraso, which means to clothe or shut. Shut the mouths of lions, right? Verse 34, espesaison. This is from anybody?
Spenimi.
Right, spenimi, which means to quench, right? Quench the power of fire, fled the mouths of the sword, were made strong from dinamao, were made strong from weakness, or maybe, out of weakness even. The next verb from ginomai, aorist indicative passive, that has the same meaning as the active form or the middle deponent form, became ischiroi, strong in battle or in war. And then par embolos actually means camps, like a military camp, and the translation actually take it as armies, so it's kind of a metonymy, I suppose. And then eklinon is from klino, which means to recline, and it can actually, apparently, I didn't know this, can have either a transitive or an intransitive meaning, and you can recline something in the sense of push it over or overcome. And so this is the aorist indicative active, third plural. Overcame, or maybe we could translate reclinified, the parambolos, the camps of strangers, of foreigners, of other people, right? And so all of these things by faith. Now, what's interesting in the list, and maybe we can just kind of stop here with a brief comment, is if you don't read, of course, a lot of things don't happen right if you don't read the Bible. You know, you can get this impression, by faith, all these wonderful things happens. Well, wonderful things happen. Well, some of them were wonderful, but by faith, they fled. You know, so it's not always faith, the glorious conquest. Sometimes it's faith, and you die anyway. We're coming to that, you know, when they're sawed in two, right? So the point is that whatever God set before them to do and whatever fate he held out for them, it was all done by faith. And what I'm reminded of, actually, are the great Old Testament heroes of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. One of the greatest lines is this, and Reed, you can tell me if I'm quoting it approximately right. Look, pal, they're saying this to the king, our God can save us from the fire, but even if he doesn't, we are not going to bow down to your idol. See, and so it's not faith like name it and claim it. It's we don't know what God's going to do. But no matter what, we're going to live by faith. So
Daniel 3:18.
Daniel, I thought it was Daniel 3:17, but apparently it's Daniel 3:18.
Yeah, 18 is where they say, but even so.
Yeah.
We're not going to bow down to
yeah,
God.
Right. So it's not by faith life is groovy. It's by faith the people of God are able to work righteousness and do the will of God. So, yeah. Okay, very fine. So we'll stop there, verse 34, and we'll pick up next week at verse 35 in Greek Club.
Thank you. Two more chapters.
Yeah, we're going to finish. Anybody know what this means, the flying tomato?
It's Dr. Celeska brought that in.
You mean coach?
Yeah, coach.
Oh, is that what that means?
Oh,
for Hebrew
class, oh. So the flying tomato is
it's not like a restaurant or a bar.
The flying tomato. It's probably modern Hebrew.
Yeah.